The following lecture was delivered at the 17th Annual National Jewish Retreat in Palm Desert, California, a project of the Rohr Jewish Learning Institute. We hope you enjoy it. We encourage you to visit jretreat.com for information on upcoming retreats. Rabbi David Finkelstein now presents his lecture, Help, There's a Bug in My Soup.
A few weeks ago, someone in my community turns to me and says, Rabbi, in the prayer book, it says something about a fly in the soup. What's with the fly in the soup? I said, in the prayer book, a fly in the soup? What do you mean? It says regarding the major laws of Shabbat. One of the major laws of Shabbat is not taking a fly out of the soup. Major laws of Shabbat? I know now exactly what he's referring to. In the Siddur, it's not part of the prayers, but if you turn to the very, very back of the Siddur, the prayer book, there's a page there which it's translated in English. It says the major laws of Shabbat. Now, this page over here, in 599 in the prayer book, it's about common errors that a person who's observing Shabbat, a common error that a person can transgress. And so the Alter Rebbe points out, Rabbi Schneer Zalman Evladi points out that there are certain things you should not transgress, even though it's a common error that you may transgress. And one of them is that if a bug falls in your soup, there's a certain way of getting it out. You don't take a spoon and take the bug out of the soup. Instead, one should pour out from the soup, or whatever is there, pour out, and allow the bug to fall out. One can blow the bug to the edge. This is a detail. You can blow it to the edge, but not blow it out of the bowl. Just blow it to the edge and then pour out from the soup, and there goes the bug. Like, Rabbi, how is this the major laws of Shabbat? I mean, really? I thought major laws of Shabbat, not to ignite a fire. Major laws of Shabbat, you should not plant and plow and do these things. But I mean, really? These are the major laws of Shabbat? How could this be a major violation of Shabbat? So first, let's talk about the technical. The technical is, what is considered work on Shabbat? The Torah says you should not violate Shabbat by doing a malacha. What is a malacha, which is translated as work? What is work? The Talmud explains the juxtaposition where the Torah speaks about the violations of Shabbat, not doing work on Shabbat, is in proximity to where the Torah speaks about building the sanctuary. So the kind of works which were used to construct the sanctuary, those are considered the works, the malacha, which is prohibited to do on Shabbat. So for 6 days of the week, we are to construct the sanctuary, the Mishkan. On the seventh day, we rest from constructing the Mishkan. Or from a different perspective, 6 days a week, we are out there in the world constructing God's sanctuary in the world. On the seventh day, we enter the sanctuary. We are in the sanctuary. We experience the sanctuary. We're not involved in the building. And there are 39 types of works. Among them is igniting fire. Among them is plowing, building, constructing. But also among them is preparing, for example, preparing the spices which were for the Mishkan. And among the works, the preparation steps for the spices is selection. You have to select the bad from the good. What is useful, what is wasteful. So the selection process is something which is therefore prohibited on Shabbat because it's part of the construction of the Mishkan and everything that was in the sanctuary. So, that's the technicality. By the way, as a result of this, there's something which is on, which adorns our Shabbat table in many, many Jewish homes, which is a direct result of this concept of called selection. In Hebrew, this is called borer. Borer. B-O-R-E-R. Borer. Selection. What is that? This is the birth of the mighty gefilte fish. How did the gefilte fish come as a result of this? Because if you're going to be having fish, you have bones in the fish. And there's a problem. You're going to be selecting the bones from the fish. And that would be a violation of Shabbat. You're selecting the undesired. You're selecting the bad from the good. The undesired from the desired. You can't do that. You have to eat the fish from the bones, not take the bones out of the fish. So one easy solution to have is, I'm going to have a gefilte fish without the bones. The type of fish that is found without bones. But think about it though. The end result is the same. What's the difference if I select a fish from the bones or the bones from the fish? The end result is I'm going to end up with bones on my plate and fish in my stomach. What's the difference? If this God really cares, if I select the bones from the fish or the fish from the bones, I mean, really? This is the kind of, you know, technicality of Shabbat that you scratch your head and think about. Wow, what else were the rabbis thinking about? Maimonides shares that when it comes to mitzvahs in the Torah which are beyond our rationale, supra-rational mitzvot, chukim, we observe them because this is what God wants us to do. Yet, if we can learn a life lesson from them, we should. One of the examples Rambam gives, this is in the Laws of Teshuvah, chapter 3, halacha 4. Rambam uses as an example the sounding of the shofar that we hear on Rosh Hashanah. There is no reason given in the Torah to hear the shofar, to sound the shofar. Yet the Rambam says, even though we observe the mitzvah because God asked us to do it, but there's a life lesson. And that life lesson is, it's a wake-up call. Wake up from your slumber. So the same can be said, the Rambam says, find the life lessons. Now, what life lesson can we learn from Borer? What life lesson can we learn from this petty detail of the laws of Shabbat? Well, one practical thing we can walk away from is when someone says, you know, Shabbat is very difficult to keep. It's really difficult. One response could be, tell me, if you have a soup and a fly falls into your soup, have you ever selected the fly out of the soup and continued eating the soup? I would never do that. Wonderful. You're keeping Shabbos. There you go. You're keeping Shabbos. So here's an easy way. We can all look at ourselves. You know, here's a way I'm keeping Shabbos. So, you know, there's a lot of jokes out there about, waiter, waiter, there's a fly in my soup. The Jewish version is, Rabbi, there's a fly in my soup. What life lesson can I learn from this? Imagine a certain person in your mind that has the following qualities. Think. A person who does not brag and boast about their accomplishments. They have many accomplishments, but they don't boast about them. They know what they want, and they take risks in order to achieve them. They focus on the big picture, and also they focus on the details. They're extremely organized, and they're patient. Yet, they don't procrastinate, don't waste a moment. They do what they have to do, extremely quick and organized. They're very confident and optimistic. And if they fail, they try again and again and again. They are determined. Imagine a person like this in your mind. What kind of person are you thinking about? This grand individual who has these qualities. A woman asks a rabbi, "Rabbi, I'm looking for the perfect man. Where do I find the perfect man?" Perfect. Perfect is a very absolute word. Everything is relative. What does perfect mean to you? Because for me, perfect. Perfect means someone who wakes up 5 a.m. every morning. They make their own bed. They prepare their own breakfast. He cleans up after himself. He does his own laundry. Exercises daily. He reads daily. Every evening, he's there for supper at the exact time every day for supper. Surfing the internet, only up to 7 minutes a day. He's in bed by 9 p.m., doesn't hang out with his friends, no alcohol. And you know where he is all the time. "Rabbi, can I find such a person? Where do I find such a person?" His rabbi says, "Yes. I know where you can find such a person." "As where?" "In prison." So remember the qualities I shared with you. What kind of person has those qualities? The qualities, not bragging or boasting, focusing on the big picture and the details, doesn't waste a moment. Who is that person? You know who that person is? One of the great Hasidic masters. His name was Rav Zusha of Anipoli. Now, I'm not describing Rav Zusha. Rav Zusha says, this person is a thief. Think about those qualities. A thief. Doesn't brag or boast about what they do. You ever see a thief bragging what they accomplished? They know what they want, and they take risks in order to achieve it. They focus on the details, not just the big picture. They're organized, they're patient. They don't waste a moment. They're confident, they're optimistic. You ever see a thief thinking, I can't do that? They're optimistic. They're sure they can achieve it. And if they fail once, they try again and again and again. Now here is the question. Rav Zusha, the Hasidic master Rav Zusha of Anipoli, said, these are 7 qualities that I learned from a thief. From observing a thief, I learned 7 qualities on how to serve God, how to serve Hashem. Now, if you would ask the average person, the average religious person, what would you learn from a thief on how to serve God? What kind of answer would you get? You would think you'd get an answer like, what not to do. look at a thief, and what you're not supposed to do is don't steal. That's what you should observe from the thief. Comes along this Hasidic master, Reb Zushan, he says, I have seven qualities I can learn from the thief. What led Reb Zusha to learn to see those qualities in this thief? Because Reb Zusha selected not the negative from the positive, he selected the positive from the negative. That's the key point of what Borer is. What is the prohibition of Borer on Shabbat? You cannot select the bones from the fish. Take the fish from the bones. Don't take the fly out of the soup. Spill out the soup until the fly comes out. In other words, select what you want from what you don't want. Select the positive from the negative, not the negative from the positive. Even though it may seem the same result, it's the selection process that is key. We are not given bad character traits by God. We are given a palette of character traits. We can then channel them positively or negatively. Reb Zusha looked at the person and selected the amazing positive qualities. Now imagine if this thief knew what they can really accomplish. Now, I know what you may be thinking, but doesn't the Torah tell us to rebuke? If you see someone doing something wrong, rebuke them. Rebuke your fellow. So I know it's nice and positive to select the good, but doesn't the Torah tell us to rebuke? Rabbi Shalom Ber Gordon, Chabad rabbi who served as an emissary of the previous Rebbe in Newark, New Jersey in the 1940s. He was a young rabbi at the time when Newark was bustling, a bustling Jewish community before the riots. He was a new rabbi in the community, and he had a challenge. The challenge was, he had community members here in the United States of America who didn't all observe Shabbat, didn't all observe going to kosher establishments, and he wanted to instill within them what is right, which means pointing out to the community members, this is wrong, and this you should not violate the Shabbat this way or that way. And it wasn't working. It wasn't working in his community. So he turned then to the previous Rebbe, the Rebbe Rayatz. He says, what do I do in my community? How do I tell people what they're doing is wrong? They're violating the Shabbat. So the Rebbe asks him, have you ever been to a schwitz? Have you ever been to a sauna? Switch conversation here. Have you ever been to a sauna? He says, yes. He says, what takes place in a sauna? As you go into a sauna, it's really hot. He says, once you get in, what do you do then? Are there different levels? He says, yes. There are different levels. You go into the sauna, and once the heat permeates you, you go on to the next step in the sauna. And then when the heat acclimates, you then go to the following step, the third step, maybe there may be even a fourth level, like bleachers. And is there an attendant in the sauna? He says, yes, there's an attendant. What does the attendant do? Because the attendant, once you're on the highest step, the attendant comes over with a broom of eucalyptus leaves. And he says, what does he do with that? He says, he hits you with it. He says, what? And do you pay? Do you give him a tip? He says, yes, it feels great. I don't understand. If you were to go outside and you meet this guy with a broom of eucalyptus leaves and he hits you on the back, you're going to give him a tip? He says, no, Rebbe, I would call the police. I says, what's the difference? Why in the sauna are you going to give him a tip? And why in the street are you going to call the police? It's because in the sauna, you're heated. And once you're heated, you then go to the next level. And then the next level, a higher level, and a higher level. And once the heat penetrates, the guy comes with the eucalyptus leaves and he gives you a little schmeiss in the back. It feels good. And you say, ah, give me more. So the Rebbe turns to him and says, you need to make your shul like a schwitz. When people come in, you have to warm them up. You have to ignite their fire. Ignite their soul. Then you have to uplift them. One level, another level, another level. And then, when you then give them something that may be challenging for them to grow, they'll say, ah, tell me some more. That is the selection process. Selecting the positive, uplifting. Now, if we take a look at the verses that speak about rebuke in the Torah, it's very precise. The Torah tells us in Leviticus, in Parshas Kedoshim, the Torah tells us, do not hate your brother in your heart. Then it speaks about the mitzvah of rebuke, followed by the mitzvah of love your fellow as yourself, yahavta l'reicha kamocha. The mitzvah of rebuke is coupled by the two mitzvahs of not having any hatred towards your brother and loving them. It has to come from the heart. That is how rebuke is fulfilled. So even the rebuke has to be with selecting the positive, finding the positive. Not long ago, there was a gentleman who attended a wedding. And he finds a rabbi that was there, and he recognizes him that this was a childhood teacher. His rabbi, his Rebbe, when he was in Hebrew day school. He turns to him and says, Rebbe, do you recognize me? He says, share with me your name. He says his name. He says, yes, of course. He says, what do you do today? Share with me. And he says, I want to tell you. I haven't seen you in so many years, but I want to tell you, Rebbe. I today am a teacher, a school teacher. And I want to tell you, you were the one to inspire me to become a school teacher. I said, really? How did I do that? What was it? I said, I don't know if you remember. There was a kid in the class who was, we were like 11, 12 years old. And he came into class with a beautiful watch. Now in those days, for someone to have their own beautiful wristwatch, they wouldn't have as little kids. After bar mitzvah, they would get a gift of them as a wristwatch, but they wouldn't have this just fancy rich wristwatches. Anyway, everyone was admiring this wristwatch. One day, this kid leaves it on his table and he comes back after recess. The wristwatch is gone. And this boy's crying, what happened to the wristwatch? What happened to the wristwatch? And it was concerned that one of the kids took the wristwatch. So he told us to all go to the wall, face the wall, and everyone close your eyes and empty out your pockets and pull out the pockets. But your eyes must be closed. Everyone pulled out their pockets, and among the stuff that came out of the pockets was a wristwatch. The wristwatch came out of my pocket. And then you told everyone to sit back down. And then you told us the following, as I wanted to share with you, I want to say, the wristwatch was found, But no, there isn't a thief in the class. There is a boy that is struggling with his negative inclination, his temptation, which got the better of him. But he's a good boy. He's not a thief. And you went on with the teaching. That was it. Rebbe, I must thank you. You saved my dignity. And that's when I decided, wow, what a teacher. And later on, I decided I want to be such a teacher that can save the dignity of the children. But you know, Rebbe, I have a question. I was sure that either during break or sometime you're going to call me over and have a discussion. I was waiting for the speech. I was waiting for that discussion. We never had that discussion. You never called me over. Why not? As I remember the story, he says, and I'll tell you why I didn't call you over. When I asked all the children to close their eyes, I closed my eyes as well. I didn't want to see which child had the watch in their pockets. In life, we always select. That's part of life. We're always selecting. However, in a mundane world, we select the bad from the good. You walk into a room, you see beautiful tiles all over the floor, and then you notice one tile is cracked or one tile is missing. Where's your eye going to go to? Your eye is going to go to the missing tile. That's natural. That's a mundane world. You know the story about the two ladies in Boca Raton? They go to the restaurant, and one lady says to the other, "You know, the food here is horrible." And the other one says, "Yeah, and the portions are so small." A rabbi is performing a funeral and says, "You know, this Mr. David Goldberg, he was a wonderful family man." Man sitting in the front says, "A family man? He never spent a moment with his family. He was a man who was proud of his Judaism." Same guy gets up. "Proud of his Judaism? What are you proud of his Judaism? He never stepped foot in shul. Maybe he came to Yizkor on Yom Kippur. He was an ethical man." "Ethical man? He was a ganef. He was a thief. What do you mean, ethical man?" At this point, the rabbi turns to the person and says, "Can you tell me something positive about him?" "Yeah, his brother is worse." You ask someone, "Hey, how are you? How are you doing?" How many times do you hear someone say, "I can't complain"? Can't complain. It's almost like they're saying, "I wish I could complain. How I wish I could complain. Ugh, I can't complain." Why can we say, "Thank God, good"? Instead of selecting the negative, selecting the positive. Now, it's natural to select the negative because we are living in a mundane world. We're living in a world where you have to fix things. And in order to fix things, you have to notice what's wrong in order to fix it. Neuropsychologist Dr. Rick Hansen posits that this is what's called, you know, you have the effect of the Velcro effect versus the Teflon effect. Velcro versus Teflon. Things that stick, things that don't stick. Regarding the negative, We have the Velcro effect. That sticks. How many of us can remember a negative comment that someone made about us in the past month? A month ago. Is it still stick in your mind? A year ago. Does it still stick in your mind? How about the positive? The positive is like the non-stick frying pan. When it comes to the negative, Dr. Hansen says, this is important to know when you're talking about life-saving measures, in order that you should be on guard. But when it comes to personal life and our relationships, we should focus on the positive. The positive should be the Velcro, and the negative should be the Teflon. Zero Mostel was one of the most famous American actors, famous for his portrayal of Tevye. But why did he choose a name like Zero? Zero Mostel? What's Zero? You take it to these Hollywood names, but there's a reason for the Hollywood names. What's Zero Mostel? Actually, his real name was Shmuel Yoel. Shmuel Yoel Mostel was one of eight children, grew up on the east side of Manhattan, grew up in an observant home. How did he choose the name Zero? He said, I'll tell you why I chose the name Zero. Because my father told me, du bist agornisht und wirst allemal bleiben agornisht. Translation, you're a zero and you'll always remain a zero. He was unhappy with me. I'll show him who's a zero. And he became Zero Mostel. There was a great rabbi in Jerusalem. His name was Rabbi Aryeh Levin. He was known as the Tzaddik of Jerusalem, the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim. He had many students. One day as he's walking in the streets of Jerusalem, he notices one of his former students not far ahead of him, walking towards him, and all of a sudden the guy crosses the street. So thinking he probably didn't see him, the rabbi also crosses the street. And now, he has no choice, he confronts him. Hey, he says, Chaim, why did you walk across the street? Did you see me? His Rebbe, I'll be honest with you. I'm not wearing a kippah. And I was embarrassed. Rabbi Levin looks at him and says, Chaim, don't you know? Can't you see? I'm a short man. All I see is up to your heart. That is what we should be looking for. That is what we're selecting. A famous 20th century psychologist and best-selling author on parenting, his name was Chaim Ginot. Chaim Ginot. And his main point in his books on parenting is that when it comes to disciplining a child, the best way to discipline a child is catching them doing something good and highlighting that. Because a child repeats the words of the parents in their mind. That becomes the inner parent. Their inner voice that repeats it again and again and again, that becomes the Velcro. Why should the voice be the negative voice and not the positive voice? And when you're finding them do something positive, specify what they're doing right, what you're impressed about. Dr. Viktor Frankl, who was known for his logotherapy, meaning and purpose in life, he said that one day he took on a new hobby, a new project, become and take on flying. Learn how to fly an airplane. And he said, I learned a fascinating lesson flying an airplane. It's called crabbing. What's crabbing? If you're going, let's say, you're going from the west and you're traveling east. If you're going to travel just due east, there are going to be crosswinds. So if you want to travel due east, you have to travel northeast. And eventually with the crosswinds, you'll end up getting to the east. But if you just travel eastward, you can end up going southeast. So the process is called crabbing, going a little bit higher to make sure that those crosswinds will make you end up landing where you want to land. Same is true about human beings. Treat a person like they are, and you will make them worse. However, if you treat a person with higher goals, higher aspirations, you look at their higher self, then you will bring out the best in them. They will end up being who they should be. Reb Lev Yitzchok of Berdichev once saw a community member smoking on Shabbos. So he turns to this individual and he says, young man, you probably forgot that today is Shabbos. He says, no, Rebbe. I didn't forget today is Shabbos. You must not be aware, or maybe you forgot that one should not be smoking on Shabbos. He says, no. I didn't forget that you can't smoke on Shabbos. So perhaps you were thinking about something else and you weren't really cognizant of the fact that you're smoking on Shabbos. He says, no, Rebbe. I know that I'm smoking on Shabbos. Rebbe Levi Yitzchok of Berdichev looks towards the heaven and says, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Master of the Universe, look at your people. Even when they transgress, they cannot lie. This is Rebbe Levi Yitzchok of Berdichev. He didn't deny the fact that he was not transgressing the Shabbos, but he selected the positive from the negative. Now, by the Rebbe, after every Yom Tov, there will be a Fabringen, a Hasidic gathering. And at this Hasidic gathering, there will be at the end of the Fabringen, at the end of the Hasidic gathering, there will be the blessing after meals on a cup of wine. And then the Rebbe would distribute from this wine to all the participants that are there. And people would then come, since it was after the holiday, people would come from all different areas in order to receive the wine from the Rebbe. One of the people who came, interesting individual, his name was Natan Yelin Mor, an Israeli journalist. This Natan Yelin Mor was born in Vilna. He was born to an observant family. Then he drifted. He joined a group of secular Zionists. Eventually moved to Israel, and he fought. He fought actually in Lehi in the Stern Gang, fought for Israel. But after 1948, the establishment of the state, he became disillusioned with all of the politics that were going on. Here he was fighting idealistically for Israel, and now all the petty politics going on, Knesset, not Knesset. So he decided, I want out. And slowly he became anti-Zionistic, vehemently anti-Zionistic, and he started writing anti-Zionistic articles. The editor of the Allgemeine Journal, a Yiddish newspaper in New York, the editor himself was a Chabad Chassid, an observant individual, pro-Israel. Nevertheless, he believed in having pluralistic journalism, and so he included his articles there. So now he asked him, Rabbi Gershon Jacobson asked Natan Yellen Moore to join him to receive the blessing from the Rebbe. As the Rebbe is distributing the wine, he comes over and Rabbi Jacobson introduces him. This is Natan Yellen Moore. The Rebbe turns to him and says, I read your articles. And the Rebbe continues, when a person is gifted with talents, they should use their talents to inspire others. You should use your talents and be truthful to your talents, to the best of your abilities, and use that to inspire others. So he turns to the Rebbe, does the Rebbe then agree with what I write? The Rebbe responded, one doesn't have to agree with everything one reads. Tell me, then the Rebbe says, what is happening with your Yiddishkeit? What is happening with your Judaism? With your Torah, with your mitzvahs? So he says back to the Rebbe, Ayid tracht, a Jew contemplates. So knowing who the Rebbe is, the Rebbe knows who he's conversing with. He tells, but you know, in Judaism, the main thing is action. So he says back to the Rebbe, it's like the story of the Bardichever. And he's about to tell the Rebbe what he's referring to. The Rebbe responds back to him, yeah, but in the story of the Bardichever, what we referenced to a few minutes ago, the Bardichever was defending the other person, not defending himself. And with that, the meeting was over. 3 months later, Natan Yellen Moore is diagnosed with terminal cancer. And at that time, he turns to Mr. Jacobson, Gershon Jacobson, and he gives him an envelope. And he says, please do not open the envelope until after I'm on the other side. And if you can publish this when I pass away. After he passes away, he opens the envelope and it says something as follows. As you read these words, I am at this point standing before the heavenly court. And they're looking through my life, seeing there may not be positive things. I may not be living up to the standards of what is expected in the heavenly court. And I may not even have what to speak about in my defense. I am therefore asking you to read these lines. If anything, the one thing I have that is positive in my life is that the Lubavitcher Rebbe told me that if I have a God-given talent, I have to use it to the fullest and be truthful. And God will guide me to the truth to inspire others. Now, this I fulfilled. I was a bit misguided, but I did try my best. You know, we tend to judge other people by their actions but judge ourselves by our intentions. The Rebbe taught us, in a way, these are the laws of Borer, that it comes to selection. When it comes to selection, it should be the other way around. We have to judge people and think about them, that there may be some misguided good intentions. When it comes to ourselves, we have to raise the bar of how much more we need to achieve. But looking at others, let's not try and fix them. Let's not try and select the negative from the positive. Let's select the positive from the negative. The laws of Shabbat are about leaving the world from fixing the world and entering into a sanctuary, into a day of meaning and purpose. And in that day of meaning and purpose, everything about it permeates even our simple activity. The simple activity of selection is so focused on, don't select the negative from the positive when you can select the positive from the negative. This is the incredible lesson we can learn, the life lesson of the major law of Shabbat, of not taking the fly out of the soup, and certainly not making the allowing the chandelier to fall on the guy under us. Thank you.
Please visit myjli.com to learn more about JLI's multiple educational offerings.